Let's remember our emotions. Ray, Kyle, Jimmy, and Doug.
Appreciate your presentation very much. I don't use the NIV a lot, so I'm not asking this, trying to defend the NIV, but you mentioned that you made a big part of your presentation about the fact that the word flesh, when it's translated in King James, is translated so many different ways in the NIV.
The other way around, but that's okay.
Okay, well, But the question I have is, even though the word is translated flesh in the King James, do all the times it's translated flesh mean the same thing in the King James and Roman?
No, like I say, the word can be modified in various ways, but the basic word has to be used to put over what the writer or inspiration had in mind. Now, when you tamper with a word by redefining it, you have problems. You let the text define it. And it never, you can look at the Bible from now to eternity, you'll never find one time where you can define it by the...
On the context, had to define each one of those terms on what flesh means, would it mean the same every time?
The word flesh means the same, but it is modified sometimes by the word sinful. You know, they had a chance to one time translate that sinful flesh, but they didn't even do it the one time they had a chance to translate sinful man. But that's true. Flesh, you're going to have to let the word stand in its own rights. And then whatever affects that word, whatever they put around it, is where you need to do it. But we'll get to that. Walk according to the flesh and soul.
Dad, I had some notes on Romans. I thought I had them in my briefcase, and I can't find them. Did you take them? I had studied this subject, and I thought I had those notes with me. When you're looking for people, I think you're the first one to... it's not in your nature, I guess. You know, what I have noticed in this discussion, anytime the King James Version comes up in other translations, you know, the people that throw the rocks are aiming up at these birds, and I don't ever see them hitting the birds, but I see those rocks coming back and hitting them on the head, and they won't ever admit it, you know. But and
I got the idea.
And I think a lot of rash statements are made, and I think they're emotive statements, and I don't believe they're proved. You know, you can't understand the Book of Romans from the NIV. The Book of Romans, the NIV is Calvinistic, or I'll hang my reputation on this statement, or you'll say, the Bible says, and quote from the King James, and the NIV says, as if the King James was God's word, you know. These are emotive statements, and I think it gets in our way of trying to teach people the truth. But let me ask you, is literal always possible?
No.
It's not.
It is on flesh.
No, okay, I'm just asking a question, though. Is it always possible to be literal?
Let me say this, because I know where you're going. When you're talking about a simple noun, it's always possible.
All right, let me ask you, I don't agree with that, but anyway, you know, Greek and English are European family of languages, and it's simplistic to think that when you have, I went to town, that in every language you just have a word for I and then another word for went and to town. Languages are different. Greek and English are somewhat similar because they're both European family of languages. But once you start translating the Bible into Hebrew or Chinese or Shona in Zimbabwe, you'll find that it's impossible to get the literal meaning. Now, would you agree with that?
Yeah. If Paul had said, for instance,
no, what I want to know really is, on another language, let's say not a European family of languages, like Shona or Chichewa in Malawi or Chinese, do you think that they have to have a literal translation? Do you think they can even do that?
I've said that when it comes to the simple nouns, in any language they can be translated from one language to another. Chinese has a word for dog. You can translate that into English or into Chinese.
Okay. Well, All right, what I am saying is, you know, you're not exactly answering it, but what I'm trying to tell people is you cannot translate word for word into other languages.
No,
you know other languages.
See, I tried to cover this, Jimmy, to start with.
Yeah, I know you did, but anyway. Have you read the King James preface? Have you ever read the preface to the King James preface?
The expanded preface, I'm not sure. Now, some of my old Bibles had it, but you're not.
No, your older Bibles never had it. I doubt if it's been in a Bible that in your lifetime has been produced.
No, I said the expanded. But go ahead. They all have prefaces.
No, they don't. The dedication to the king is not a preface. But anyway, in that preface, the King James translators argue for getting the sense across and not the literal word. And what would we call that today?
Well, just remember the scholars said that it's literal.
What would we call it today?
What's that? Getting the sense across.
Right.
There's cases where you have to. I'm not arguing.
Right. But what would we call it?
Paraphrasing.
We'd call it dynamic equivalence, wouldn't we?
Well, that's okay to me.
In other words, I'm saying the King James translators themselves said they did this.
I'm not denying you do it, Jimmy. We're dealing with a doctrinal point in this lesson.
Right, okay, but I need to establish some things because you said some things.
Hurry along,
okay. I know you're going to try to cut me off. Now, you said one is literal, one is dynamic equivalent, but you don't want one Greek text to be bad, one good. We are talking relatively. One out of 1,000 words we're talking about in the Greek text, but we're also talking relative terms when we come to literal and dynamic equivalence. And I think that needs to be, you know, don't act like one is miles apart and one's real close. Okay, I need to move on. You didn't like additions to the Bible. Do you think the books of Apocrypha are additions to God's Word? Do you think the King James Version had them in there? You think? Yeah, I know. The printers took that out, not the King James translators. Do you think 1 John 5:7 is in God's Word? It's
no.
An addition. In the King James, though. So anyway, you didn't like... You don't like people to say the King James Version is Calvinist, but because you said they believe in inherited sin, but that's not to say they're Calvinist, but they believe in inherited sin, but who is the one that influenced them to put out their Bible? The Puritans, and they used what Bible? The Geneva Bible. And who put out the Geneva Bible? John Calvin. Okay. So some people that put out the NIV are Calvinists, some people aren't, but you want to call it Calvinist. But the people that put out the King James were influenced to do it by the Geneva Bible, and who was put out, and they believe in inherited sin, but you don't want it to be called Calvinist. All right. Now, it said you can't understand Romans in the NIV. I don't think you can understand the simple things, even, in the King James Version. And you went by those, like verse 13, I was let hitherto. The word let today means allow.
I said there are obscure words.
But you never mentioned any of these.
No, I don't. The text. And
right.
So go ahead.
Or debate. You know, you won't understand. Then it was a violent action. Today it means a discussion. Or in Romans 5, the many versus the one. The King James Version left out the article. Why didn't you mention that? That's pretty important. The many versus the one. The King James Version left it out. What about the word God in Romans 8:28 as the subject of the sentence? The King James Version leaves it out. Now let me ask you about, do you approve of someone using God's name in vain or to express surprise? Do you approve of that?
Well, I hope you don't.
I hope you don't either. But in God forbid, that phrase, God forbid, is God in the text? Is it in the Greek text? In God forbid? In the King James? Well, I'll just save you time. It's not. In other words, what I'm saying, it's not in the Greek text. They're using God's name in vain to express a strong statement. And God said he will not hold anyone guiltless who misuses his name. And every time you read it to express that strong statement, you're using God's name again. Now that needs to be remembered by people. And you talk about, they translated a different word in English. In chapter 4 of Romans, the King James Version will translate a word counted, imputed, reckoned. The same Greek word, three different English words. In the Hebrew Old Testament, the word debar, there's a noun for you. 84 different English words in the King James Version. Now you see these people that throw these stones, they're coming back and they kind of hit them on the head. But anyway, you can't say, you know, you take a word and it has to stay that word all the time. Now, I want to say something about Sarks, because that's a problem. I don't believe Sarks is Calvinistic. I don't believe Sarks' sinful nature is Calvinistic, like you have suggested.
Well, what does nature mean?
It means a propensity or a tendency to do something.
There's not a dictionary on that.
Now, I'll let you have the footnote that they have, okay?
Well, I couldn't.
One time, the people that put out the NIV in their footnote explain it as being a tendency to sin. Now, they're the people that put it out. We do have a tendency to sin, don't
we? It's not the definition.
Okay, but I want to say something. Now, Sarks is used 8 different ways in the New Testament. 8 different definitions for Sarks in the New Testament. And you're saying it has to be the same word in English all the time. That's not translated. The word logos is used 22 different ways in the New Testament. But would you translate it the same way every time?
Here's the point, Jimmy. You can talk all afternoon about nouns used in different ways. I'm not arguing that point.
Okay, but what I'm saying is, whatever it means, it does not mean flesh. Now, what you would say is, you said something like, well, it always means flesh and not sinful nature. It never means flesh. When we think of flesh, there's 3 common meanings for flesh. When we think of flesh, that is not what Paul was wanting us to think. Regardless
now,
of what...
You overlooked something I said. The basic word is always flesh. It's got modifiers, obviously, it can be used figuratively. But that word is flesh.
If you put it into English, flesh, you are not translating. It's a mistranslation. Because the word that we have in our mind as flesh is this that's on our body, and that is a mistranslation.
Well, we better go on.
Everybody's looking at your watches, Jimmy.
Okay.
15 minutes. Let's
imagine that. Okay, let me just say this. You know, when we come to translations... When we study with the Baptists, we present all the truth to them and they won't change. But we'll study on translations and we'll present you all the truth and the evidence and people won't change. I don't know why we should ever complain again. They won't change when all the evidence is against the King James, people won't change. And we complain that people don't read and study their Bibles, and yet we allow them to use the King James Version, and there's not a person in this audience that can understand much of what is said in the King James.
No, okay.
But anyway.
My question is real short.
What about your comments?
I want to just present an argument that was presented to me and just allow you to answer the argument. It deals with the idea of nature, you know, saying that by nature means inherited or by birth.
It means original.
Okay, would you comment on Ephesians 2 and verse 3 that we were by nature the children of wrath?
I've got comments on it, I'd have to go to Thayer to understand.
Well, all I'm saying, would that mean then that we were children of wrath by nature, that we inherited?
It's got to be interpreted and understood contextually.
Thayer gives two different meanings to that. You know, one of them is acquired, and the other is by nature. So contextually, you have to determine the
Jerry, I appreciated your sermon. Now, I like the NIV, and I thought you presented some interesting things. And I had the same question down that Doug did, and I know you, that's not your subject, but you don't believe, none of us here believe, that we inherited sin, no matter what translation we're using, and nature cannot be. That's Fuse there. I thought you said that Arndt Gingrich said Fuse meant to be born or original. And however, what I wanted to say was, however you explain Ephesians 2:8 to people when you're studying with them, that's how I explain sinful nature to people when I'm studying with them. When you're studying with people and you explain Ephesians 2:8, we are by nature the children of wrath, you're using the King James and you explain that to them as an acquired nature, that's how I explain sinful nature when I'm studying the book of Romans out of the NIV with people.
Well, I don't have my notes on this, so I'm not going to get into that.
My only point there is that you have to explain to people what sinful nature means is, and the King James does translate nature there as by nature the children of wrath.
So you're admitting you have to retranslate sinful nature.
You have to explain it to people, yes.
That is not correct.
Well, you have to explain that it's not inherited sin.
What do you understand nature to mean in that verse? Is all I'm asking you to say.
An acquired. I understand it to mean an acquired nature.
That's not what they said. That's not what the translator said.
Well,
you see,
but you see, you've got the same problem with the King James, Jerry. That's all I'm saying.
King James. I'm talking about the people that put it out said that.
I know that, and that needs to be considered. All I'm saying is that you got the same exact problem with the King James in Ephesians 2:3.
I'm not arguing for the King James. I'm saying in the text that I found today, the King James had it right and the NIV was wrong. And I'm saying it's not just a slip of the pen. We're talking about a chapter and a half in a row. Now, you're going to find any translation problem with it and use that as an excuse to uphold another. But we're talking about a major error, not just a Ephesians 2 business. We're talking about a major critical error. And sure, the King James got a problem. I'm not going to stand here and argue it doesn't. But you people are going to have to deal with the NIV this evening.
I know, but what I'm saying is not just problems, it's the same problem.
It's not really. Because you picked out an isolated verse away over there somewhere and want to build a case to uphold the NIV. I'm talking about a chapter and a half in a row that deals with a critical theological problem having to do with our salvation. There's a host of differences there.
Okay, well, I'm not up to build a case for the NIV. I use the other two, like you do.
I know you do. And I'm not, and I want to say something before I forget it, and you go ahead. We should never make a translation a point of fellowship. Only if error is taught should be a point of fellowship. And if we refuse to use a brethren because he used a translation that we don't use, we're going to be making a big mistake.
Well, I agree with that.
So go ahead.
Why did the King James translators render sarkos, which is the genitive of sarx, if I read it right, carnally in Romans 8:6? Why didn't they render it flesh?
You see, in Romans 8 and what?
6.
8 and 6.
I think 7
you
also.
You see, there it is an adjective. It's an adverb. You see, it's adverbial form.
Well, I know, but why did they render it fleshly then?
They couldn't, because...
Well, fleshly is an adverb.
Whenever they use the word carnally, they use a legitimate English word, because that means flesh. And incidentally, that sarkos
that where Paul said, I am carnal, is the same word used in the 15th chapter, the 27th verse, when he spoke of carnal things. Now, when you get over into the adjectival use of the word flesh in English, we sometimes use the Latin term, and that's all they've done. There's nothing there. It's just the Latin term for flesh.
Okay. On Shona, I think I have the right word in mind here. You cannot translate hail into Shona. They don't have a word for hail. That's a simple noun. They don't have hail, so they don't have a word. So you have to translate it ice rock or something like that.
Yeah.
Greg DeGolf and Runaway.
Jerry, I especially appreciate what you just said about not making them translation of Test of Fellowship, especially because I use the NIV. So. But what I appreciated about it was what you said about doctrinal error. You know, if a brother teaches doctrinal error and it's the result of using a translation, then we have to deal with the problem. And I'm not familiar with anyone doing that, although it's a possibility. But I think that's when we have to start dealing with the problems, when people start teaching doctrinal error. They're not being studious, and that's the whole point. We have to go back, like you've used several Greek words, we have to go back to the Greek text to find out these things anyway. But in relation to what you were saying about footnotes, I don't know if you've completed what you were saying about footnotes, but I'd like to make just a kind of a comment like that and just tell you how I handle some of these things in Romans 7 and 8. I realize that not every use of the word sarkos or sark is footnoted in Romans, but in Romans 7 and 8 they particularly are. And in the preface that's included with the NIV, in the end of it, I'll just read it quickly. The footnotes in this version are of several kinds, most of which need no explanation. Those giving alternative translations begin with or and generally introduce the alternative with the last word preceding it in the text, except when it's a single word alternative, and so on and so forth. Anyway, it says, footnotes introduced by or do not have uniform significance. In some cases, two possible translations were considered to have about equal validity. In other cases, though the translators were convinced that the translation in the text was correct, they judged that another interpretation was possible and of sufficient importance to be represented in a footnote. And when you look at Romans 7 and 8, you'll see flesh in the footnote. Except so what I do, I told you, not every place is footnote.
No, I mean in footnotes. Go ahead, I'll show you something.
But anyway, what I'm saying is when I come to that, if I have a problem with it, I can just read flesh. You know, because there's no argument about that. So if someone has a problem with it, we can just look down in the footnote and see. You can use flesh there because they judged it of sufficient importance to include it as a footnote.
Yeah, but that's not going to work because they've got it in the text. But read the footnote on Romans 8a, the first one at the bottom. Read it.
Or my flesh.
No, the A footnote.
Oh, okay. Some later manuscripts, 8a. Is that right?
Yep.
I've got 18a here. Which verse, Romans?
You started reading.
Okay. Or my, some later manuscripts, Jesus, who did not live according to the sinful nature, but according to the Spirit.
Now you tell me, I'll give you a $100 check. I don't have that much in my pocket. You give me a manuscript that says that.
Okay.
Now, that's a footnote.
But my point was...
No, my point is, here is a footnote, and they got it right in the footnote that a manuscript says that. You see, that's what you got into with these footnotes. They left the impression that somewhere out there is a Greek text that backs this up. They put sinful nature in the footnote. I know they do flesh or something. And now they've worked it right into the footnote without an explanation and said the Greek says it. And those Greek people around here, they just produce the Greek text that says that. They said it, some of them do. I want one of them that says it. They said manuscripts say it. You see, we're dealing with people that tampered with the text. And then they finally worked it into the footnote and say, well, why? The Greek says that. They didn't say flesh. They said sinful nature. There's not a manuscript, I'm sure, on the face of the earth that says that.
My point was that they have already attributed the translation sinful nature to being equivalent to flesh. And so that was my point, that if you have a problem with sinful nature, just read flesh then. And I understand that in many places it's not footnoted, but in these, in many of these places it is. So.
Yeah. But you see what the NIV did there? Is they pulled one of the biggest stunts you could ever imagine. They left the impression that a Greek text says that somewhere. It's just not in there.
Jerry, this will come as a great surprise to you and a lot of other people. I agree with everything you said. In fact, I think you did a masterful job. And it's interesting to me that we ever found the truth, since we basically grew up on the King James Version. Some of these fellows who obeyed the gospel and made pretty good preachers did that on the King James Version. The real problem, though, was this. The minute, you know, your lesson had nothing to do with the King James Version. Its faults, its failures, its inadequacies, or even if there's error there. And to start a harangue about what all is bad with the King James Version doesn't deal with what you put out. And that's what needs to be dealt with. The major point you made, or one of the major points you made, which I would like to just comment on, is the fact that the intention of the translators was to promote their doctrine. And there's not the least doubt in my mind that that's exactly what they intended to do, and that is what they did. They promoted a doctrine that the Bible didn't teach in a subversive way. And many people have been gullible enough to accept that. There is a conspiracy, I believe there has been a conspiracy for a number of years to do that. Not only in this, but in some other so-called translations. And I certainly do not stand up today to defend the King James or any other translation. Nor do I believe the NIV is all bad. But I certainly cannot defend the book of Romans. I have publicly said that it does teach Calvinism, and I still say it teaches Calvinism. And the idea of if it bothers me to read sinful nature, then just read flesh, doesn't answer the problem. If it's teaching a false doctrine, it needs to be pointed out.
G.B. Ayers.
If the sinful nature passages were cleaned up in Romans, would that be acceptable to you with the text?
Well,
then is rendered in
the we dealt with some others. What we've gotten into, I am real jumpy with an equivalent type translation equivalence, because I read the NIV a lot, And when I read these verses that are unfamiliar with me, then I say, well, are they trying to pull one off? Now, I've caught them trying to do that in some of these texts that we studied today. And you're always on edge. What have they done now to this text? You can talk about how easy it is just to read through it and everything's fine. But if you're a serious student, you're not going to take the other guy's word for it. And as these guys, Stuart and Fee, said, if you want to know what the original Hebrew and Greek looked like, you better get one of these literal translations. Now, it doesn't mean the literal is always right, because we do the same thing with King James. But it's a lot easier with King James than the literal, because you don't have to sort through all their verbiage to find out what they're doing with the word. But I'll tell you what, I've seen people that have been members of the church that are old, and they use these dynamic equivalents in the church, which is their business, and I'm not going to make a problem out of it. But they don't ever even know what's going on. They can't find the verses, and I can't myself sometimes tell what they're saying. Now, if you're going to use other translations, common sense tells me to use one that is compatible with what people generally use. And you can do that and still use your modern translations. But when you skid this over to this point and then clear over here, you're making it difficult for the people. And I think wisdom enters into this too. Use something that people can follow and at least have some way of knowing what's being said. But sometimes they don't have the foggiest idea.
Johnny Elmore.
I commend your presentation, Jerry. I think it's was much needed. I want to just read what two of the men who assisted in that translation had to say about about that, Sardis. This is by Lewis Foster, who was one of the men on the committee. Quote, the word for flesh in the Greek is sarx. In the NIV, the word sarx is translated flesh only 30 times out of 138 Greek uses. The next most frequent translation of the word is sinful nature 25 times. But this rendering is more of an interpretation than a translation. The safest thing to do is to leave the word with its primary meaning, flesh, and relegate the discussion to the commentary rather than write sinful nature into the text. This is carrying free translation too far, unquote. Then Raymond Dillard, who also was on the committee, said, the Greek term sarx usually translated flesh. So I don't think there's any question that the intent was there. I might just say one other thing. I want to ask you a question, and then I want to make some comments, and you can answer the question, and I'll be through. What do you think about Psalm 51 and 5, and then Ezekiel 18, 19, and 20? Those, to me, are contradictory. Now, I'll let you answer in just a minute, but I want to mention something else. The NIV in Romans 1 and 3 says, instead of the obedience of faith, faith being an objective term there, says obedience that comes by faith. And of course, that suggests personal faith. Matthew 16 and 18, according to them, the church is built on Peter. Matthew 17, 15 through 18, they just plainly say that he's an epileptic, which is not in the text. They've already, that's a comment. Matthew 19 and 28 teaches premillennialism, along with Acts 3 and 21, the renewal of all things. Acts 26 and 28 is hard to explain because it says, has Agrippa saying, do you think that in such a short time you can persuade me to be a Christian? And that casts aspersion on the name Christian. Matthew 5 and 17 has Jesus saying, do not think I have come to abolish the law. And yet in Ephesians 2:15, they say, by abolishing in his flesh the law with its commandments and regulations. So there's a flat-out contradiction, and I could go on and on.
Yeah, well, of course, I won't be able to answer that. I appreciate it. And the verse in Psalms, it's a difficult verse, but they don't have it translated, I'm sure, correctly. For I know my transgressions, and my sin is always before me. He said, against you and only you have I sinned. Now, let me see. That's Psalms 51, verse what? Verse
5.
5. I'll get to it. Surely I have been a sinner from my birth, sinful from the time my mother conceived me. Of course, what they do on verses like this, they'll argue that's poetic license stuff, you know. And I'm aware of this and some of these others. But anyway, I think that it's hard. You, like you say, you're always on the edge of your seat when you read a translation like this because you wonder when they've wormed something in on you unsuspecting. And moreover, we go back to that point of wisdom I mentioned earlier about, you know, let's use some common sense and take into consideration our audiences, too.
Well, at least we know what the errors of the King James Version are.
Alton Bacon.
Be very brief because Johnny just referred to what I had in mind. In Psalms 51 in verse 5, surely I have been a sinner from my birth, sinful from the time my mother conceived me. That is the wording of the NIV. And no one believes that. I don't believe that there's a man that holds the Bible in their hand could say that they believe that. And if they used it as a text, they'd have a hard time preaching the truth from it. We do not believe that a child is born in sin. and sinful from the time they're born, and that is a statement that is made. And in a time that we live where religion is on a straining effort to survive all the attacks from every source on earth, a time whenever people are struggling to build the church up, to have something like this, one preacher get up and people are following in the congregation, their Bible's not reading like they're reading there, and this is the one that's been used for so long. It just seems like it's unwise, to say the least, to pull something new like this on. In fact, every young preacher in this congregation was raised in congregations across the country, almost without exception of the King James teaching. And I don't know of anyone that's ever been led wrong by doing it. And why in this modern time, when chaos is on every hand, division on the edge of many places, that such would even be introduced? I know it's just a line of reasoning, but some of those statements that are so contradictive to just plain, simple Bible truths, I just think it should be deleted, and the brethren should not use them in that other than a matter of reference. In my library, I have at least 65 translations or versions of the Bible. And I use them all in the same manner as reference work, and the NIV is just one of those.
Jimmy Crouch. This will be the last one, Murphy.
Just a few comments. I think the NIV is subject to scrutiny just like any other translation is. But I think it ought to be subject to scrutiny on the same level as any other translation. I think we have to be very careful in how we criticize any translation and what we're holding on to, not being willing to scrutinize it as well. The topic this evening, or this afternoon, was the NIV and Romans. And what's been presented somewhat is a scrutiny of the NIV in general. And I think it's subject to scrutiny, but that's not the topic under observation right now. Psalms 51 and 5, I'd just like to read into the record the way the King James Version renders it, and say that it says, "Behold, I was shapen in iniquity, and in sin did my mother conceive me." Now, I have a hard time figuring out how that's much different, and I think it is poetic literature. And if we go up just a couple of verses just in explaining this, because I do believe we have to explain it in the King James as well. In verse 4, it says, that David is saying, "Against thee," speaking to God, "against thee, thee only have I sinned." Well, is God the only one David ever sinned against? In this case, if we can believe the note at the top of the chapter, David is speaking of his sin against when he sinned with Bathsheba. He certainly sinned against Uriah as well, and against Bathsheba in committing that sin. But he says, "Against thee and thee only have I sinned." And he says, "My sin is ever before me." This is simply a hyperbole. David expressing the greatness of his sin. It's poetic literature, and it has to be understood in that sense, regardless of what translation it's read from. There are other comments I'd like to make, but I thought it was suffice.
Well, let me just say this. You know, one thing I've tried to do this evening is get past the translation to start with into the minds of the translators. And I believe I succeeded in that. I went to the source, the Christian Reformed Church, the Executive Secretary, Ed Palmer. I went to what Calvinists of this nature believe about sin and nature. And I proved it wasn't a mere slip of the pen. It was a very conscious effort to change something into a wrong doctrine, sinful doctrine too. And even in the footnote, I should prove to you that they said the Greek text said sinful nature, and they're not wrong to say it. They lied.